south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, here's something you probably won't believe. In an article that just came out in an Ecuadorian news rag. Turns out, in South America anyway, there's panic amongst the illegals trying to get to the United States. The title of the article, Rising Coyote Fees Slow U.S. Migration. Starts by saying, according to the foreign ministry, the number of Ecuadorians attempting to enter the U.S. without a visa, that is illegals, is less than 20% of what it was in 2020. Man, that's a huge drop. It's a good thing, right? That's an 80% drop, and it's got nothing to do with governments throwing money at the problem, which never works anyway. Anyway, it says, the reason the ministry says the fees are so high is because the human traffickers, the coyotes, who provide the escort service to the border, so-called coyoteros, obviously coyote in Spanish. According to the coyotes themselves, in 2020, the average cost was $12,000 for the trip. Now remember, we're talking about going from South America through all those countries in between Central America and on finally through Mexico to get to the States. In other words, when you're an illegal coming from South America, you got to cross through at least six different countries. And the coyotes have to pay off people in every one of those countries. That's why in South America, it costs 12 grand and half of that if you're in Central America trying to get to the States. Another reason it's so much cheaper to pay a coyote to get you to the United States from Central America, you know, Guatemala, Honduras, Salvador, because they don't have to go through that so-called Darien Gap, that frontier between Panama and Colombia. That's just miles and miles of swamp, but no passable road. It's just mud, water, mosquitoes, and crocodillos, you know, crocodiles, and that scares the hell out of people, and it should. Some people who don't have the dough slog through it, but only half of them make it as far as Panama. And then you've got five more countries to go through. If you pay a coyote, though, they guarantee passage by boat. Anyway, according to a spokesman for the coyotes, wow, they even have spokesmen. Man, are they organized. Though I think it's time they fired the head of their PR department, don't you? But it's probably nepotism. Chapo's brother. Anyway, the spokesman for the coyote union, Local 72, he says, and this is no joke, there were more Ecuadorians detained in the U.S. border than from any other country in South America. You got that? More Ecuadorians than any other country from South America sneaking into the U.S. That was 2 years ago. But today it says most detainees that are caught are Venezuelans. Very few are Ecuadorians. And it's all about the money, what the coyotes charge. According to the coyote spokesman, I still don't get that, he says the higher coyote fees, they're about double now, since 2020. They haven't skyrocketed because coyotes are gouging people more. Not any more than in the past, anyway. But the article says the increase in fees is due to the fact that Mexico is now requiring Ecuadorians to have a visa to enter. Because, you see, up to a year or so ago, Ecuadorians, like people from the U.S., could just walk right into Mexico and get an instant tourist visa on the spot. But that's no longer. Now they have to go down to the Mexican embassy in Ecuador and apply for that visa. And it's one of the toughest visas in the world to get. In fact, Mexico has the same visa requirements that the U.S. has for their visas. And that's why so many millions of Latin Americans sneak in, because the rules are tough and they never could possibly qualify. The fact is, if you can get a visa to visit Mexico, it's nearly an automatic in to be able to travel to the United States. Legally. However, 99.99% of Latin Americans can't qualify for that because they can't meet the financial background criteria. Specifically, you must prove that you have a credit card, not a debit card, that has at least a $2,000 limit. And man, I'll tell you, here in Latin America, if you get a bank account, you get a debit card. Then after a couple of years, you can apply for a credit card, and you'll have about a $500 limit. And after you have that a couple of years, they'll up the limit to $1,000, and then a couple more years, $2,000. That is, if you don't fall behind, you get delinquent, or at least pay the interest on your credit card statement. In fact, that's all they want you to pay, right? Interest. So you'll be paying forever. That's another story that you knew already, right? Anyway, you get the point. It seems to work out if you have a decent job here in Latin America. I'm talking about Latinos now. you'll probably still never qualify for a $2,000 limit Visa or MasterCard. That's why almost everyone that gets into the United States legally either has a legal relative up in the states that's sponsoring them. Then you don't need to fulfill that credit card requirement because the person up in the states, that relative, will sign a paper at the embassy saying he or she's the guarantor of last resort. The second way that Latinos get into America legally is if they're upper middle class or wealthy and can prove it. Only about 2 or 3% of Latinos can qualify as upper middle class or wealthy. But the fact is, if you're upper middle class in Latin America, you've got no desire to immigrate to the States because you've got a house and a car and you're pretty established as the big dog in your own neighborhood. And the only connection you want to have with the United States is to be able to visit my jammy in Disneyland once in a while. It's that gringo wannabe syndrome that pervades Latin America, but only the upper middle class and wealthy can afford to do so. The point is, if you ask any coyote or border patrol guy, they'll tell you it's the very uneducated and the low-hanging fruit and the criminal class that sneak into the States. And you know, for a long time, people said, well, they've got nothing to lose. They got nothing back home. That's why they risk the journey. Well, there's always some of that. But I got to tell you, I run into people all the time, like that gas station attendant I was telling you about the other day. He was caught and deported 4 times. You got to wonder how he came up with $6,000 4 different times to pay those coyotes. Then there's that private taxi driver I use quite a bit when I'm in El Salvador. His name is Tiburon, means shark in English. They've all got nicknames, you know. Anyway, he's been deported 4 or 5 times, kept going back and forth, took enough money to buy himself a cab. Then he came back down, bought himself a decent car and a house. By the way, it's a funny thing, you know, it seems all the freelance taxi drivers down here drive one particular car, usually a Kia Rio or Sonata. What they are is workhorse, pretty ugly sedans, but they're cheap. So anyway, he told me with the money he made up in the States, he was able to buy a car and a house in his home country, El Salvador. I've seen it. It's not a house you and I would want to live in. It's lower middle class. But remember, this guy was poor and came from nothing. For him, it's a big step up. Plus, there's nothing like pride of ownership. And, of course, he paid back his debt to the coyotes. You know, he's the one that told me. Remember, he's from El Salvador. He said that anyone could go to the United States safely and securely by coyote. That's protection money so you don't get robbed or raped. He said their part of the deal ends when they drop you off at a safe house across the border in Texas. And he said all the stories you hear about rapes, murders, robberies, and all that are people who did not pay the coyote or did not come up with the money they said they would. Because, in fact, he said every little town in both North and South America has a go-to guy who everyone knows is the official coyote representative. Yep, every town has a rep. It's a business deal, he said. They don't want to screw with you. They just want your money. Robberies and rapes do not happen with paying customers, he said. But if they don't get it, they really screw with you. Or when you try to cross on your own, doing it yourself. You're stepping on their territory, and it's extremely dangerous. For the coyotes who are in bed with the narcos, it's the second biggest moneymaker next to the drug trade. It's been estimated, you know, the U.S. illegal drug trade's worth about $100 billion a year. Now, just for a minute, think about the money coyotes make. According to the U.S. Border Control, just last year in 2021, they reported 1,600,000 encounters with immigrants. People they saw, they physically counted. Either by capture, seeing them on drone footage, or infrared, night vision, encounters, etc. The fact is, Border Patrol workers say that there are at least 4 million people coming in a year, with a great percentage being deported repeat offenders. Repeaters are great business for coyotes too, which is why they don't tolerate rapes and robberies with paying customers. Yep, I've met many deported repeaters. I mostly run into them because they speak passable English. They see a gringo and they try to buddy up. I could be at a little deli or gas station and someone will come up to me with those famous opening words, "Where'd you from, man?" And eventually, if we talk long enough, I'll get him to admit how many times he's been deported. In fact, during my last seminar, I met a rent-a-cop in El Salvador who told me he was in the United States for 10 years. He had a common-law wife up there, a couple of kids. He got caught drunk and driving. They deported him back to El Salvador, where he also has some kids and sort of a wife. That's another thing, you know, I meet so many Latin Americans, especially the so-called low-hanging fruit, the uneducated ones. I'm talking about Latino guys now who've got a family up in the States and in their Latin country, too. Now, here's the thing. Many Latinos say they have a husband or wife, but they never actually went down and got married, not in a church, not at the courthouse. It's just amazing to me how many middle and lower middle class families you see down here that appear to be headed up by lawfully married couples, but they're not. I know that's another subject completely, and I've never bothered to do the numbers. But the fact is, upper middle class and wealthy Latinos get married legally. You see people in their wedding duds doing photo shoots around town all the time. You can pretty much bet their families, or at least one of their families, is upper middle class or wealthy. And though it's every young lady's dream to have a big fancy wedding, that rarely comes to pass with middle and lower middle class Latinas. In fact, it used to surprise me, though it doesn't anymore, when I find out one of my Latin friends or Latina girlfriend's parents were never really married, and there's absolutely no stigma or embarrassment about it. Though they'll always call each other husband and wife. Well, at first, years ago, that used to kind of shock me. In fact, it rubbed me wrong because being brought up a good Catholic boy, Catholic school all the way and all that, where I came from, that just wasn't done. In fact, all through my good old Catholic grade school, there was only one girl in the whole class whose parents were divorced. All the old Catholic ladies in the neighborhood whispered. They didn't invite her to any of the coffee clutches, that's for sure. Back then, Catholic husbands and wives didn't get divorced no matter how much they hated each other. Oh, and about the fact that Latino families with kids, where the couple stays together, most of them aren't actually married legally at all. Well, you might think it's about the money, but think of it. You could go down to the courthouse for 10 bucks and get married, right? But still, they don't bother to do it. And it's not that the ladies don't want to do it, they do. And when I've talked to guys about this, guys who have so-called common law wives in that situation, I have asked one or two of them why they just don't go down and get the license. And they all tell me the same thing. They say, we're a couple. We're husband and wife. We don't need a piece of paper. I've even heard a few of them say, God doesn't recognize courthouse weddings. What? Yeah, right, but your Catholic God thinks it's okay if you live with a guy and have a couple of kids with him. Jesus. But somehow the ladies in that situation will always say, but someday we're going to do it upright at a church. Big church wedding. Someday when we have the dough. You can only scratch your head. Though I have to admit, it does happen sometimes. I was invited to two weddings of people who had grown kids. They never got married and were living common law for 15 or 20 years, but they finally did it. They tied the knot with a big church wedding. Turns out, someone died and they came into some dough. So in their case, it really was all about the money. But back to this coyote thing. So figure it out. 3 million people at $5,000 a head. That's a $15 billion a year money machine for the coyotes. And those are the old prices from 2020. Now, the price has doubled. So anyway, my buddy Tiburon, the taxi driver from El Salvador, told me that when someone wants safe passage to the U.S., they know exactly who in town to go to. And it's a legit business deal, too, with signed paperwork. Of course, it's almost impossible for a single person to come up with that dough, so they pool the family resources, or the family signs off for them as co-signers. It's basically like taking out a loan at the bank with co-signers. And if you don't pay the monthly VIG, the co-signers are on the hook for it. And here's the thing most people don't know. There's lots of remesas, billions and billions of dollars coming back to these countries from the United States from illegals up in the States who are working some kind of job. But more than half of that money coming back every month, it might be 100 or two from each individual. At least half of that remesa money, at least for the first couple of years, goes to repaying that VIG. So if you get deported back to your home country and want to make a repeat trip to the States, no dice until you paid off the last coyote loan. So just imagine a guy that's been deported 4 or 5 times. He's into the coyotes for 20 or 25 grand already, at least at the old prices. It's a fantastic business model for the coyotes. Much better than drugs, because if you get caught with drugs, you go to the slammer for sure. But if you caught people smuggling, you usually get some advance warning and you can cut and run. And if you get caught and put in detention, the U.S. will ship you back on their dime or cut you loose on your own recognizance. Ha ha. Or you could catch a free bus to New York or Chicago. I hear the mayors and governors up there are real soft touches for illegal aliens. Somehow it always seems to work out that the farther your state is from the Mexican border, the more you believe in rights for illegal aliens. It's those good Christian, not in my backyard, values, right? All right, moving on. Here's a story that'll warm the cockles of your heart. Did you know your heart had cockles? Supposed to. Can't seem to find mine. This news, fresh out of Ecuador once again. Title of the article, Robbery Suspect Lynched in Ricorte. It starts off by saying a 29-year-old man was detained by an angry crowd Friday in Ricorte. He was beaten and his motorcycle set on fire. According to those who captured him, the man and his partner, remember, two guys on a motorcycle, beware. It says, the man and his partner, who escaped on foot, attempted to rob a woman who withdrew money from an ATM machine. Unfortunately, the suspect was rescued and arrested by police following 30 minutes of detention by the crowd. By the way, I inserted the word unfortunately. Anyway, A man who participated in the capture and beating of the subject said, "We are so tired of crimes in our barrios. We cannot depend on our police." He said, "We will continue to take this kind of justice into our own hands when criminals attack us. If the police and judges don't punish, we will." Then the article goes on to say, on Saturday, a statement was released by a representative of the Cuenca Citizens Ombudsman Office, who said they are extremely concerned about the rising number of cases of vigilantism. This is a trend nationwide and indicates a breakdown in our law enforcement system. Duh, you think? Then he said, when crowds punish criminals, they sometimes lynch innocent people too. Misidentified people have died at the hands of mobs. To which I say, me, Johnny. Innocent people die because idiot police officers don't act or don't even show up. By the way, just to put a finer point on this barrio versus neighborhood thing, and this is how it goes pretty much throughout Latin America. If someone says they're from a barrio or a barrio exists here or there or whatever, that's a lower, scruffy neighborhood that I don't recommend for gringos and expats to live, play, and or hang out. For example, my cleaning lady lives in a barrio. She spends about $100 a month on her rent. Now, in a decent area of any Latin American city, a decent area for a gringo or expat, you're going to pay at least $300 or $400 a month. If you got your sights set lower than that, you're going to be in a barrio. That means you'll hear roosters at the crack of dawn and often at 2 or 3 in the morning, dogs barking like crazy, chicken buses with their massive air horns blasting by. Yeah, you know, it's a funny thing. One of the first add-on accessories to a chicken bus is a high-pressure air horn. Those damn things are beyond annoying. In fact, they're deafening. Oh, and if you live in a barrio or hang out there, just at the crack of dawn, the guys in their little push cart selling vegetables will roll by and they'll scream out what they've got. Piña, piña, aguacate, aguacate. Oh, and don't forget your barrio will be loaded with rice-burning little motorcycles that whine like spring-loaded toys. And most of the cars and pickups will be wrecks that should have graced the junkyard a long time ago. Oh, and did I mention that when there's a gang problem in a particular Latin American city, guess where they live? In the barrio. And if you notice in that last article where the motorcyclist got pounced on by the public, they mentioned that word, barrio. So basically, just think of the word barrio as a low-class neighborhood that you don't want to live, work, or hang out in. Now, that's not to say you can't walk or drive through those places during the day. You can. Just know that's where about 90% of all the crimes take place, in the barrio. So then what do gringos and expats call the neighborhoods we live in? Colonias, colonies, or districts or zonas, zones. Not that there aren't some iffy districts, colonies, and zones, but down here, like everywhere else, you get what you pay for. If you want to live in a decent, nice, safe community, far from the nearest barrio, you can expect to pay $300, $400, $500, or $600 a month for a nice apartment. Now, if you rent a whole house in a nice area, it might cost you $700, $800, $900, or even $1,000 a month. That's why you absolutely have to get boots on the ground. Sure, you can sit up in Milwaukee or Cleveland and view Latin American real estate pages all day long. But I'll tell you, most of those sites, especially if they're in English, they're going to nail you for gringo prices. That's why you absolutely have to come down and check things out for yourself. That is, while you still can. I just can't understand why people procrastinate so much. There are scads of people. Scads, that's another strange word, huh? That have been sending me emails since this show began, what, 12 years ago now. Talking about how they're putting together that plan B. They just need to do a few more things up in the States. And that's been going on and on and on. They just never seem to get down here for even a short boots on the ground trip. It's getting harder and harder to get residency. That means more hoops to jump through and more doors slammed in your face. Well, as Jesus said, there will always be procrastinators. Or was it the poor? That's it, poor procrastinators. Because I guarantee if you keep procrastinating on your plan B, you will end up poor. After all, the U.S. is completely bankrupt, beyond broke. If you're one of those cows left in the barn, it'll be your blood they'll suck to the last drop. Well, it won't be mine or any other gringo or expat living here in Latin America. We are not the low-hanging fruit. You are. All right, speaking of gringos living in the hood down here, whether it's a good hood or a bad hood, you long-time listeners have heard me say that it's a good idea if you're going back and forth to the States a lot or back and forth to Europe, whatever, and you're only going to be in Latin America a couple of months a year, maybe half the year, who knows? It's a great idea to get an apartment or condo in a residential tower. Then you could just lock it up, turn off the gas and electricity and go. Leave it for a couple of months, come back and get that cleaning lady over there to mop up the dust, get rid of the spider webs and the cucaracha poop, and you're good to go. Now, the thing is, lots of gringos like to rent or buy a property that's got a garden, single-family house. In that case, if you're gone a lot or even gone for a couple of months a year and you don't have someone watching that property, the neighbors and the no-goodniks will figure you're not home. There's always a risk of a break-in. Except, of course, if you live in a nice, protected, gated, guarded community where you have to go through a guard and check in first. Now, I've lived in quite a few places like that, and it's never a problem. The thing is, though, and it might sound counterintuitive, you got to inform the guards and your neighbors you're going to be gone for a couple of weeks or a month or whatever. Now, of course, you've heard the stories. Even up in the states where there's gated, guarded communities, when there is a robbery, the first person you point to is the help or the guards, right? Because they know your patterns. The thing is, these days, it's absolutely necessary to get yourself a camera system in your house. You know, one that you can scan with your phone so you could look at your place, all the key checkpoints and locations anyway, at a glance, wherever you are. I've had a system like that for years. And now that those 4K, you know, ultra high definition cameras are under $100 a piece, it almost seems crazy not to get a system. In fact, last Christmas, I was able to pick up 8 4K cameras for $59 a piece. Then I bought an NVR for like $120 with a 4 terabyte disc inside. It records for almost a month. That was about $200. Plus the wiring, the 8 cameras and a monitor or two set me back about $1,000. Maybe the best grand I ever spent. So then what about these robberies you hear about right under your nose in a gated guarded community or a residential tower no less? Yep, happened to a gringo friend of mine staying in the same building, a residential tower. He was on the 2nd floor. He owned the apartment and I was in the Airbnb on the 7th. Bad guys got in when he wasn't home and stole 2 computers and a television. So how do you think that happened? After all, a gated, guarded residential tower where everyone, guests, workers, everyone has to check in with the front desk and write their name in a book and show their IDs and it's all on camera too. How could there be an undetected robbery? Unless, of course, it's an inside job. The guards or the cleaning lady, whatever, are involved. Well, you could rightly assume that, even bet on it. But maybe not so much after you hear excerpts from this article I'm going to read you that just came out from the news site El Mercurio, the Mercury, Ecuador's largest news rag. Now, again, the reason why I talk about Ecuador once in a while is because it's on International Living's and Every Fool Expat Rags list as the number 1 or 2 gringo expat Plan B destination. However, the more gringos, the more scams. So I bring up Ecuador quite a bit because it's the latest and greatest, and gringos are piling in there and saying, Johnny, why not Ecuador? Why not Ecuador? Well, again, nice place to visit, but I'd never want to live there. Too many gringos. And all the accompanying stink and bad secondary effects that come along with that. Now, of course, this could be applied to any place that's well on the gringo tourist trail. Costa Rica, Cancun, all the so-called Mayan Riviera on Mexico's Caribbean side, etc., etc. But right now, I'd rather talk about Ecuador because so many starry-eyed, ill-informed gringos have their hearts set on it. All right, this article's in Spanish, and the title of it is Así se protege un condominio. Translation? This is how you protect your condominium. Once again, I'll paraphrase this to cut out the boring parts. It says, last September, criminal gangs entered at least 5 condominiums and developments in different sectors of Cuenca, Ecuador. Different gringo and expat sectors. All of the break-ins were recorded on security cameras. The ease with which these delinquents entered, in spite of security guards at most of the locations, shows the lack of security protocols gringos take. It also shows that criminal organizations use similar methods to commit those robberies. How did that happen? Here's how they did it. They passed themselves off as visitors or service employees, such as builders, plumbers, electricians, car mechanics, etc., and they dressed the part. By the way, me, Johnny, here again. That's a good one, car mechanic. Suppose you're gone for 2 or 3 months. You leave your car in the parking lot or the underground parking at your condominium. Suppose a bad guy shows up at a guard check with the repairman's uniform. It's got the name of your car, your license number, and your name, of course, and a service order. Says he's there to do some work on your car. Get it ready for when you come back from outside the country. The idiot guard with a 9th grade education buys that story hook, line, and sinker. The guy goes to your car in the parking lot, lays some tools on the ground, pops the door of the hood, hot wires it, takes off, and there goes your Honda CR-V. Now, of course, you're thinking, they got this guy on camera, right? Well, guess what? Crooks wear masks. Another shitty secondary effect of the COVIDian thing. Yeah, I realize, and it's a good thing, too. Less and less people are wearing masks, but when they wear them, you think, what a clueless dickhead. But a huge boon for the criminal class, right? Since it's beyond totally acceptable, no one would ever think to ask you to take your mask off. These days, you could wear a mask and play the fool or the criminal all day long. Oh, sorry, I never completed that last thought about having a house or an apartment outside of a gated, guarded residence. Well, that's perfectly fine if you're in a decent neighborhood and are paying, like I said, $350 or more rent a month. In other words, you're not living in the barrio. But if you're going to go away for a while, weeks or months at a time, I suggest you have your cleaning lady live in. I can't tell you how many times I've done that myself. And when I come back from a trip, whatever, everything's just the way it was and mighty spick and span, too. After all, she is the cleaning lady, and that's what she's good at. Can you still say that? Spick and span? Or will the semi-literate, wokester, Latinx idiots up in the States start their whining again? Time will tell, time will tell. All right, now I'd like to say a word to you expat gonna-bes and wannabes who've never been down to Latin America at all, yet you keep listening to this show, getting international living and a lot of other expat rags and blogs. You know the score, you've heard what it's really like, you know the truth. But still, you keep sending me emails saying, Johnny, I'm hearing all this stuff up in the States about how dangerous it is in Latin America. Well, here's my response. If you're interested in a plan B in Latin America and you've been focusing on it for years, you've been putting effort into studying it, you've been listening to this show, for example, for a lot of years, and you still have no boots on the ground, aside from maybe Cancun and Costa Rica. That's not boots on the ground, sorry. Here's my advice. If you still believe the U.S. State Department and all the articles coming out from the lamestream media about how dangerous it is down here, don't come. If you're so petrified you're going to get shot or kidnapped, don't come. If you're going to worry or threat every time you walk out the door to go to the supermarket, don't come down. We don't need you. We don't want you. Because lamestream media has already planted that idea in your mind. Fine. I like it that way. All of us expats who live down here love it that way. We don't want gringos and expats flooding in and ruining our good thing like they already did Cancun, Acapulco, Costa Rica, Rio, Playa del Carmen, Tulum, Puerto Vallarta, and on and on. Fact is, gringos and expats who end up living down here, getting that plan B going, are sort of the adventurous type. They've got that I want to get boots on the ground and see for myself attitude before freaking out about the news they get from the lamestream media. Remember, as for the lamestream media, good news doesn't sell, it gets no clicks, it's bad news that sells copy and gets all the likes. Earthquakes, revolutions, landslides, crime, volcanoes, that's all you're going to hear about Latin America in the lamestream news. In fact, I'll never forget what my grandma said when I first came down here 30-something years ago now. She said, why would you ever go down there? Aren't you worried about being kidnapped or killed? You could disappear and never be seen again. I said, Grandma, if you're driving down Division Street in the heart of the Loop in Chicago, and you take a left instead of a right, you'll never come out again. She said, yeah, but Johnny, I know Chicago. I'd never take a left there. Yep, my grandma was no tourist in Chicago. She had lots of boots on the ground. I rest my case. Oh, and remember, that was 30 years ago when Chicago only had 5 murders a weekend. Now it's 50.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.